Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all lines are in listen-only mode for the duration of today's conference. This conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Today's call will feature a question-and-answer session. To ask a question, please press star one. I'll now turn the call over to Dr. Jim Caruso. Sir, you may begin.
Okay. Thank you very much. Is the audio fine?
Audio is good.
Okay, great. So first of all, I want to welcome all of you to this webinar about the CRI program. My name is Jim Caruso. I'm the Assistant Director for Computer and Information Science and Engineering here at the National Science Foundation. And before that, and even currently, I'm a professor at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst in the Computer Science Department. So I'm going to turn things over to Jeremy, who's right here in just a second. But first of all, I just wanted to start with a couple of brief comments. First, again, welcome to all of you out there participating in this webinar. We're really here because we, meaning the National Science Foundation and more broadly the computer science community, really care deeply about the junior faculty who are part of our community. And this CRI program that you'll be hearing about shortly is a relatively new program and actually a response, in a sense, by the SIES, Computer Information Science and Engineering Directorate, to needs that we saw in the community to be able to provide a vehicle for funding and investments in junior faculty to really jumpstart research early on in a faculty career. And so you're going to hear about the details from Jeremy and others here. But I did want to say that, again, we're doing this in response to needs within the community. And just to let you know that we, other organizations, other computer science organizations across the country, like the CRA, for instance, have a number of activities and a number of programs that are really geared towards junior faculty. So you'll hear about CRII. You probably know about the Career Awards. We at the National Science Foundation and SIES also run a number of workshops for early career faculty. So, for instance, last week I was at a workshop that we did for the NETS program, the Network Systems program, where there were probably 90 or so people there, probably two-thirds faculty in their first two or three years, and then a number of graduate students and postdocs also. And we've done those also in cyber physical systems. So we have workshops that we run, workshops that we have for people who want to both webinars like this and in person for folks who are writing proposals. So we had a workshop earlier this year for career proposal writers. And again, we have the programs themselves, like the CRII, that you're going to hear about. And organizations like the CRA offer similar types of activities in terms of workshops and career mentoring for early career faculty. So we're here. We're here for you folks and being responsive to the needs of the community. So I'm going to turn things over to Jeremy in just a second, but I want to let you know who's here from the National Science Foundation. So there's me, Jim Caruso, Jeremy Epstein here on my left, Ephraim Glinert here on my right, who's a program director here in SIES, and then farther down on my right, Sushil Prasad, who's also a relatively new program director here within SIES. And the fourth program director who's involved in this program, Almadina Cheklanova, is, well, she's on vacation this week, so she can't be here. So, again, we want to thank you all for joining in here. Jeremy's going to make a presentation, and then we're going to open it up for questions. And really, we'd encourage anybody there who has questions, comments, concerns they want to raise to please participate, because we mean for this to be a very interactive webinar. So I think with that, let me thank the crew here. It's the program directors that you're going to hear from here who really make this program work, and thank them for their hard work and their innovation, again, because this is a relatively new program. Let me turn things over to you, Jeremy.
Thanks very much, Jim. Appreciate the welcome and the introduction. Actually, before I start into the slides, I should mention that the four of us, Almadina, Ephraim, Sushil, and I lead the CRII program, but the actual proposals that come in are managed by each individual program, so the NETS program, the SHF program, et cetera. So if you have questions about the science of a particular program, you should contact the particular program officers for that program. If you're if you have questions after this webinar about the CRII overarching program, then you should contact one of the four of us again, Sushil, Almandana, Ephraim, or myself. So, and with that, I'll start into our presentation. I know some of you have the slides emailed because we weren't able to get everyone onto the webinar, and I will try to remember to give you the slide numbers when I change slides. Okay, so on slide two, I'm going to start with an outline of this presentation. The goals of the program, the requirements for eligibility, areas of interest to the program, the submission process, review process, and a few of the frequently asked questions. We do get a lot of questions about this program. Everything I tell you is a synopsis of the solicitation, which has more details. The recently released FAQ, which you can find on the NSF website, also has many questions and answers. If we don't cover whatever questions you have today, please do check the FAQ, and if you don't find the answer there, contact Almudena, Ephraim, Sushil, or me, and our contact information is on the last slide as well as on the CRII website. These slides will be posted to the NSF website after the conclusion of this webinar, along with a recording of the webinar itself. And we're going to try to keep this to an hour, but we can go longer if there's more Q&A. So the goal of the program, as described on slide three, is to support researchers in the first 2 years of their academic positions so they can establish their own research programs independent of their advisors. The funds provided are intended to allow you to hire undergraduate or graduate students to get your research program going, including acquiring data, developing algorithms and approaches, building prototypes, and developing collaborations within or across research disciplines. On slide four, let me give you a really brief summary of what happened in fiscal year 15, which just ended earlier this week. These are proposals that were submitted in September of 2014. SIZE programs awarded 82 CRII awards for a total of about $12.4 million over the next 2 years. As they say, past performance is not a predictor of future results, but you can read more about the awards by going to www.nsf.gov/award search and type CRII in the search box. Of the 82 awards, 81 were to a single program, and one was to both, Connected Health and Cyber Human Systems. This year's solicitation says 35 to 40 awards, but more are possible depending on the proposal quality and the availability of funds.
And that happened last year, right?
And that happened last year. Last year we said, I think, 25 to 30, and we actually did 82. So it's not a promise, but it may happen. So I don't want people to be scared that it's only 25 to 30. As I said on slide five, as I said, you can go to the nsf.gov /award search page, type in CRII, and on slide six, this is as fancy as I got with graphics, you can see some sample awards. You'll get a list of all 82. And you click on any of the titles, and on slide seven, you'll see a sample, and what you get is you get the basic information about the PI, his or her contact information, and an abstract of the award, and so you can find out all about them. On slide eight, I want to go over, for those of you who have heard through the grapevine about last fall's competition or perhaps applied yourselves, I want to emphasize the changes from last year. First, the eligibility rules have been clarified and in some cases tightened. In the previous solicitation, some requirements were at the time of submission, others as of the deadline, and still others as of when an award is made. To simplify the timing question, all eligibility requirements this year are as of the deadline date, which is September 30th. I'm going to repeat that because this is a significant change from last year's eligibility and because we've received many questions. All eligibility requirements are as of the deadline date, which is September 30th. Also, to address questions about whether visiting physicians are eligible and whether they count against the two-year limit, we've revised the language to explain that our goal is to distinguish between positions that are similar to regular faculty members who advise students and can serve as a PI from those who do not typically have those characteristics. A new limit also restricts applicants to no more than 5 years after PhD conferral, except in the case of family and medical leave. And finally, tenured faculty are not eligible for CRII. Second, the contents of the department chair letter were clarified to note that it should state that the PI is A, in the first 2 years of a tenure track or research science or education position or equivalent, B, untenured, and C, no more than 5 years since being granted a PhD. Additionally, if the PI has held visiting positions, those should be explained in the letter. And third, we clarified that funds may be used for undergraduate as well as graduate students, and they may be used for postdocs as well as students. This is particularly applicable to faculty members at undergraduate institutions, where there obviously would not be graduate students. On slide 9, I want to now go over more detail on program eligibility. It's been the number one item we've received questions about both last year and this year. In short, there are 5 parts to eligibility. First, you must be in an academic position, not a postdoc or research associate, at a university or a 2- or 4-year college. It doesn't matter if your position is tenure track or not tenure track, as long as you're not tenured, nor does your title, such as assistant or associate professor, matter, so long as you're not tenured. Your primary appointment must be in an area supported by size. Computer science, information science, electrical or computer engineering are the most common, but not exclusive. For example, you could be in a mechanical engineering department if your research is on the computing aspects of robotics or smart cars. Second, you must not be more than 5 years since your PhD as of the deadline for submissions. Again, that's September 30th this year. The only exception is family or medical leave, as I said earlier, in which case you should discuss the situation with a program officer prior to submission and ensure that your department chair letter includes the explanation of the leave. Third, you must have been in the academic position for no more than 2 years since your PhD, not counting family or medical leave. This 2-year limit is as of the date of submission, which is September 30th. So if you started your academic position in the 2014-15 academic year, you are eligible. If you started in the fall of 2013-14 academic year or earlier, you will not be eligible unless you took a leave of absence, again, for family or medical reasons. Positions in government or industry do not count against the 2-year limit. Neither do postdocs, research associates. However, academic positions held overseas, whether tenure track, tenured or not, do not count towards the 2-year limit. And fourth, you must not be tenured already. So that's 4 of the 5 parts to eligibility. And on slide 10, the fifth part of eligibility, which is another area where we've received many questions. You must not have received any grants from NSF or other government agencies in the PI role. A co-PI role does not disqualify, nor do these particular types of other NSF grants. And I emphasize you need to read these particular types if you received a PI award. Awards from your university, contracts from a company, private foundation gifts, things like that do not affect your eligibility. If you have a collaborative NSF grant, note that the lead PI from each institution is considered a PI, so being the PI from a non-lead institution would disqualify. The 2 questions in considering eligibility are where does the money come from and what is your role? The amount of money involved does not matter, be it large or small. Again, the rules are as of the submission date, the deadline for submission, not the submission date. So if you receive notification of another award after the submission deadline, that will not affect your eligibility. It's as of the deadline for submission. On slide 11, as I said earlier, the program is open to faculty doing research in any of the areas supported by size. This slide lists the current size programs that are accepting CRII submissions. Your proposal must list at least one program which is relevant to your research proposal, and I'll get in a minute, I'll tell you how that's done. Descriptions of each of the programs can be found on the NSF website. Slide 12, as described in the solicitation, proposals are limited to 10 pages, not the 15 pages typical for most proposals, NSF proposals. I'm not going to review the rules for fonts and margins. Please see the grant proposal guide for instructions so you don't run into problems. Trying to squeeze in more text by reducing fonts and margins is not only frustrating to reviewers, but is also likely to have your proposal returned without review. Please don't do it. A few other points on submission. No co-PIs or other senior personnel are permitted. However, consultants and subawardees are allowed. The proposal must be for no more than $175,000 over no more than 2 years. You may only submit one CRII proposal. A common question is whether a PI may submit both a CRII and career proposal in the same year. The answer is yes. However, as I'll mention later, we don't particularly recommend it. I think I've spoken enough about the two-year rule, so you must not have been in your academic position more than 2 years as of the submission deadline. Unlike last year, you cannot submit your proposal early to have it considered based on submission date. Eligibility is as of the deadline date. On slide 13, a reminder that all NSF proposals must include a data management plan as a supplementary document in Fastlane, and if you have postdocs in your budget, you must have a one-page postdoc mentoring plan also submitted as a supplementary document. You must have a letter from your department chair certifying that you meet the eligibility requirements, including the two-year rule. That next paragraph is irrelevant. Slide 14 is where we talk about the submission title. The title helps us identify which program should look at your proposal. Your proposal must be targeted at one or more of these size programs. So the title starts with a string CRII colon, followed by the acronyms, which are in parentheses on this slide, of the program or programs that are appropriate. We suggest one or two programs, although there is no limit. This program name does not guarantee which program will look at your proposal, but will help us find the most appropriate program officer to manage your proposal. On slide 15, proposals are reviewed using the standard NSF merit review process, which includes consideration of both intellectual merit and broader impact. Unlike career proposals, there is not a specific educational component required. Factors considered in the review process include relevance to one or more of the size programs as mentioned in the previous slide, the appropriateness of the research to a two-year window, the potential to produce sufficient preliminary research to help you prepare for other research awards such as career, and whether the award activities are appropriate to help you achieve research independence. Slide 16, the budget is intended to be spent mostly on students, including both undergraduates and graduates. Some fraction may go to specialized equipment, such as unique hardware or software. Ordinary laptops and servers should not generally be included in the budget. Some travel funds are expected, so you or your students can attend conferences. No funds may go to the PI, whether for summer salary, course buyouts, or academic year support. As noted, the total must not exceed $175,000. REU supplements may be embedded in the proposal, see the grant proposal guide for instructions, which is the only case where the budget may exceed $175,000 by the amount of the REU supplement. REU supplements can also be added after the fact following standard NSF policies. While we're anticipating 35 to 40 awards, as Jim and I discussed earlier, again, I'll note that there were 82 awards last year, so it's quite possible there may be more, depending on quality and funds available. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to ask the operator to start queuing up questions, and while those questions are queuing, I will review some of the common questions, frequently asked questions we've received, and then we'll open the phone lines. So operator, if you would please open the phone lines for questions, but not put any of them through quite yet.
If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 and record your name at the prompt. Your name is required to introduce your question. To withdraw your question, you may press star 2. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 and record your first and last name at the prompt. Thank you.
Thank you, operator. So I will, while those are queuing up, I'm going to go over these frequently asked questions. So slide 18. Is a tenure track appointment required? As I said, no. Eligible PIs must be in the first 2 years of a tenure track or research, science, or education position or equivalent. And does receiving an EAGR as a PI disqualify me? Yes, if you are the PI on an EAGR, that is not one of the classes that is exempt. If you are the PI either from a lead or non-lead institution. On slide 19, what are appropriate uses of funds for faculty at two-year and undergraduate-only institutions? Funds may be allocated to undergraduate support, and the proposal should include a mentoring plan and strategies for dealing with undergraduates, given that they have heavy class loads and are harder to integrate into research groups. CRII does not prevent submitting a future career award, and we expect that many CRII awardees will subsequently submit career proposals. Slide 20, you may submit to both career and CRII in the same year if the proposals are different. You may not submit the same proposal to both. However, the goal of CRII is to provide you with a starting fund to begin your research and achieve preliminary results that will in turn allow you to write better proposals in the future. So you may want to focus on a CRII 1 year and a career in a subsequent year. On slide 21, you may not submit the same proposal to CRII as another program at the same time. Does the CRII count towards the two proposal limit for size core programs or other size programs such as SACSE? No, it does not count against that limit. You could still submit a CRII proposal and two others. Slide 22, how many awards have been made in the past? Last year was the first year that we did awards, so the 82 I keep talking about are the only CRII awards that you'll find out there on the award website. And I've already spoke about 35 to 40 awards we expect to make this year or more, or subject to availability of funds. A common question is, can I get copies of previous proposals? Your proposal that you submit to NSF is your property. It's not our property, so we cannot share proposals. The abstracts of all winning proposals are on the NSF website. So we can't share them, but we can't share the proposal itself. Slide 23, who do you contact for questions? If you have questions about the programmatic aspects, things like eligibility, timelines, you contact one of the four of us, Sushil, Almedena, Ephraim, or myself. If you have technical questions, like is my proposal appropriate for a particular program, you want to ask that program and not one of the four of us, because we won't be able to tell you about other people's programs. And with that, let me open, ask the operator to start releasing questions, and Ephraim and Sushil, if you'll join me in answering questions.
Sure.
Can you open up
to move over, or should we sit here?
Can you pick you out, Joe?
Yeah, I'll be happy to slide.
Okay, go ahead.
We do have our first question in queue. One moment for the name, please. And the first question is from Brian Krupp. Your line is open.
Yes, I just see that in the presentation, PhD is referenced. For those that have a doctorate of engineering, can they apply as well?
Yes. I don't think there's more to say than that. Yes.
Very easy.
And the next question is from Sarjeet Roy. Your line is open.
Hi, I'm Sarjeet Roy from Colorado State, and I wanted to know if we could have
letters of commitment from our collaborators? And if yes, then what should the letter state? In the sense that I know that now in the career proposal, the letters are just a one-line statement saying that, okay, the collaborators are willing to do whatever is stated in the proposal. Is this the same format that's going to be used for CRII?
No, I don't think so. The career format is very unusual, very brief, as you said. If you have a collaborator who's going to be taking part in the research, you should include a letter from them stating that they're aware of the project, that they're looking forward to participating in it, that they're going to be available. That should definitely be there. It does not have to be one line.
Oh, perfect. Thank you.
And just since you haven't spoken before, Efraim, that was Efraim Gunner speaking.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
And the next question is from Patricia Francis Lyon. Your line is open.
Hi. At my university, many people, when they start out, have a position as an adjunct, and then they move to a position called term professor. And a term professor's full-time does not advise students, and rather than having a term-to-term contract like an adjunct, you have a year-to-year. And I was wondering if this would disqualify me. I'm in the first 2 years. I've had 1 year as a tenure-track position now in a school of nursing and health professions, but prior to that, at the same university, I was a term professor for 3 years.
That's a new one. I think we'd like to think about that one and take that offline rather than making up an answer on the fly. Could you send us an email and we will respond to you?
Yes, thank you very much.
Next, please.
The next participant did not record their name, but they are from Clemson University. Your line is open.
Hi. This is Ling Ho from Clemson University. I have a question about co-PI status. I have been co-PI on some proposal, and in one proposal, the PI moved away, so I was moved into a PI position. So does that disqualify me?
No, it does not disqualify you. We didn't come up and we're not the PI when the proposal was submitted, so we do not consider that disqualifying.
Okay, thank you.
But it might be worth noting that in your proposal, just so that we don't get confused, or having your
okay.
department chair note it in his or her letter.
Okay, thanks.
Next, please.
Currently, there are no questions in queue, but as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 and record your first and last name.
Okay, last year, we had 100 questions. Either I've gotten really better with a briefing or...
We do have questions incoming. One moment for the name. The first question is from Yvette Wan. Your line is open.
Hi. I was wondering if we also need to present our proposal in context of our five-year plan, or if it just can be just the 2 years.
Within the two-year plan is acceptable. Many people do place it in the context of this is where I'm going to help reviewers understand that there is a bigger picture, but it's not mandatory. Did that answer your question?
Yes.
The next question is from Vivian Noddy. Your line is open.
Hi. I was wondering if we change institutions, for instance, from a postdoc position to an assistant professor position, if we are able to move the award with us.
Well, if you're asking if you move to a new institution after getting a CRII award, would you be able to take it with you? Is that the question?
Yes.
Yes, you should be able to. A CRII award, I believe, like career, is a single investigator award, and the university cannot ask to appoint the substitute PI. If you leave, you would be able to transfer it to your new institution.
So long as your new institution is also eligible as a two-year or four-year college or university. You couldn't transfer it, for example, to a research lab that was not associated with the university, but short of that, you could transfer it.
Good point.
Okay, thank you.
And the next question is from Brian Simon. Your line is open.
Hello, Brian Simon, Syracuse University. I have a question for you with respect to this. This is related to the collaboration letter, but it's also, but in terms of getting a letter of support from institutions, organizations, or groups who will be sort of opening themselves up and providing participants for my work. What should be detailed in those letters?
The first thing is that the support letters are not allowed by NSF. Collaboration letters are. So make sure the letter is explicit in what they are doing. A support letter that says we think it's a good idea will be discarded. A letter that says this is what we're doing with you is fine and would be appropriate in a case like you're describing.
Okay, so it should essentially detail that they will provide the facilities to conduct interviews and observations and fun things like that.
That would be an appropriate letter, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Next question is from Leila Esandri. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Leila Esandri from University of Cincinnati. My question is about the preliminary data. I know that you mentioned that there is not that much required for preliminary data, but if we have it, is it going to help or doesn't really matter? Thank you.
Any preliminary data that you can provide to make your proposal stronger should definitely be included. We know that most people submitting a CRII proposal won't have any, and the purpose of the program is really to allow you to build up that preliminary data for future proposals. But if you already do have some, by all means, talk about it in your proposal because it will make your case stronger.
Thank you.
And the next participant did not record their name, but they are from MIT. Your line is open.
Hi, my name is Maria Mehri. I wanted to see what was the acceptance rate last year of this proposal.
We generally don't share acceptance rates on a program-by-program basis. Across size, we fund about 20% of all proposals, we don't give the numbers more at a more granular level than that. Sorry about that.
No problem. Thanks.
And again, as a reminder to ask a question, please press star 1 and record your first and last name at the prompt. We do have our next question. One moment for the name, please. The next question is from Rupa. Your line is open.
Hi, I'm Rupa from SUNY Poly. I know that senior personnel are not permitted as co-PIs on this grant, on the CRI grant. Then what's the letter of collaboration all about?
I
think you may not actually have a senior personnel. On the other hand, you may actually have a collaborator who could assist you, let's say, with some facilities, maybe actually do some research with you. They could be from, a STEM department, maybe another institution.
They might provide data to you. They might be collaborating by providing data to your research, providing facilities, as Sushil said, providing equipment, things like that.
Right. Typically, these collaborators that we're talking about are other institutions, companies, museums, organizations, which can provide you with stuff that you need to do the research, which you can't work without, access to people to ask questions if you need to interview people, access to data which you couldn't otherwise get, equipment perhaps to use that they have and will let you use for nothing, facilities of other kinds. It's those kinds of collaborations that we're talking about in particular, and for those you do need a letter.
Okay, thanks.
The next question is from Sarajit Roy. Your line is open.
Hi, I'm Sarajit Roy, and I wanted to ask a question specifically regarding the eligibility criteria. So I am within the 5 years after completing my PhD, but more to the point about, having the tenure-track position. So I was supposed to take up the position from the fall term in 2013, but around that time there was the U.S. government shutdown and everything. So my official position, I officially took up the position from middle of November in 2013, which technically would put me within the eligibility window. So is that fine?
That would be fine. You should have your department chair letter explicitly state that, because it will look unusual, and so having it in writing will remind us why it is that you're eligible.
Sure. Thank you.
And the next question is from Na Meng. Your line is open.
Go ahead, please.
Oh, hello. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Okay. So this question is kind of a clarification. So from the website, I learned that it's like the total funding amount is less than 170,000. Is that amount for in total for the 2 years or each year it's this amount? And how many graduate students kind of to be supported by it, one or two?
The $175,000 is for the 2 years combined.
Mm-hmm.
It includes everything. It includes students. It includes travel, equipment,
mm-hmm.
Consultants, whatever else you need. In terms of the number of graduate students or undergraduate students, that will obviously depend on your university's rate.
Mm-hmm.
And there's such a variety or range that I can't really give you a specific number.
Okay. Thank you.
There could be RU support.
There could be RU support as well. That's
in addition
true.
To this.
In addition, yeah. Good point.
Okay. Thank you.
The next question is from Advait Jong. Your line is open.
Hi. I'm Advait from William & Mary. I have a question regarding the undergraduate and the postdoctoral plan you mentioned. So is it separate from the 10 pages? And if yes, will there be like requirement of two different plans for postdoc and undergraduate, and what actually it consists of?
I didn't completely understand that. Did you guys get it? Or?
Undergraduate,
something about an undergraduate part?
So there was a postdoctoral plan, and as well as there was undergraduate plan you mentioned on the slide.
Okay, now I've got it. So the postdoctoral mentoring plan is a supplementary document and is not included in the 10 pages. That's a one-page additional supplemental document. RU supplements, if you're embedding an RU supplement in your proposal, which is permitted, you do not get extra pages for that. It just allows you to have additional money in your budget over the $175,000. You can have usually $8,000 or $16,000 additional to support undergraduate students.
Okay, thank you.
The next question is from Harsha Chenje. Your line is open.
Hello, Harsha Chenje from Ohio University. My question is about the review process. Will it be an ad hoc or panel review or a mixture of both? Thank you.
It's hard to say. Most of our reviewing is done by panels nowadays, but in special cases, we do review some proposals by ad hoc means. Perhaps if expertise is required, it's very specialized, and we don't have it on a panel. It's a unique area. So it could be either of the two methods that you mentioned. They're both completely legitimate, one or the other, depending on the case. Probably a panel, but it's impossible to say more than that.
I think in my program, I think we did one proposal by ad hoc and everything else on panels, and I think that's probably pretty typical.
And also, actually, I think for ACI, you know, this may actually be multidisciplinary. It could be ad hoc reviews. There could also be some co-funding. And so I think we are slightly slightly different in that sense, you know, to really reaching out to the community that is using cyber infrastructure and developing that in the context of some computer science problems.
Thank you.
The next question is from Yinseng Zhang. Your line is open.
Go ahead, please.
This is Yang Wang from the Ohio State University. So I have a question about the specific criteria about the proposal. It says it should show that I will be able to do research independently, and I should be able to provide preliminary results for my future research. So do I need to write anything specific about those two criteria in my proposal?
You would want to, if you have preliminary results, you would want to include those in your proposal to help convince the panelists that your approach is likely to be successful. I'm not sure that I understand the other part of your question.
My question is the criteria says that this proposal or the program or the project I'm proposing should provide preliminary results for my future proposal, such as a career. Okay. So do I need to demonstrate this in my proposal? For example, do I need to say I plan to do this in my future and
I see. Okay. It wouldn't hurt, but it's certainly not necessary. You want to convince the panelists that the results you develop will be useful for the future, and so sketching out your longer-term plan will help convince the panelists of that. But you don't need a specific section or anything like that that says, and here is how I'm going to use the preliminary results towards a career award, for example.
Okay. Thank you.
The next question is from Ejet Japan from University of Central Florida. Your line is open.
Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Hi, my name is Ipta Jain from the University of Florida. I had a question about undergraduate research. I have a few undergraduate researchers who are working in my lab, and you've mentioned that it's possible to budget for them, but I wasn't sure if I could do it even if I'm not in an undergraduate-only institution.
Yes, you may.
Okay. And what are the ways in which I may budget for them? I'd like to be able to do travel as well as to be able to pay them to work.
That's fine. You can budget for to pay them. You can budget for travel for them. If they are going to need equipment to get the research done, you can budget for the equipment that they need to get the research done. Then you can treat them just as any other student.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
The next question is from John Brunhaber. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks for doing this. I was wondering if there was a factor specific to CRII that made one proposal more successful than another.
Interesting idea. I don't think I have a good answer for that.
Can I make
please,
a comment?
Please,
I think that the notion of how to write a good proposal, it's always great to get advice from people in your institution or colleagues who've written proposals. So get a pair of eyes on the proposal before it's due and ask people for their input. And they may be people outside of your disciplines. I remember when I wrote my first proposal, I'm in networking, I had a software engineer and a programming language person read it, and they shredded it, but it was really valuable feedback to get.
That's a really good point, Jim, because the people who read your proposal on panels are not necessarily going to be in exactly the same space as you are, and so making sure that your proposal makes sense to computer scientists who might not be in your exact same niche is very important and very useful. I'll also make the comment that I've made in the career workshops many times that grammar and spelling really count because panelists are looking for something to complain about, and if you give them if a proposal is hard to read, then they will not go any further sometimes. As I frequently say, if English is not your native language, have a native English speaker read it, and if English is your native language, have a native English speaker read it. It happens for both.
And maybe I'll make one more comment then. The CRA every 2 years runs a career mentoring workshop, and there was a session last year on how to write proposals and tips for writing proposals that Susanna Hambrusch, who was a division director here, and I, when I was a faculty member, at UMass, both led, and they were what I thought. A lot of the ideas came from Susanna, but I thought they were good advice.
And another thing, actually, is that feel free to write to us as well. You know, if you have a summary, send it to people that you think are the best fit for your program, and see what you might get some feedback.
The next question is from Tanya. Your line is open.
Yeah, so my question was that I'm in my third year. I just started my third year into postdoc, and just wondering if that would make me ineligible to apply.
A postdoc is not eligible to apply. You have to be in either a regular academic teaching or research position. But as soon as you get finished with your postdoc and move into a teaching or research position, I hope you'll apply.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
The next question is from Zinze Wong. Your line is open.
Hello?
Go ahead, please.
Sorry, UMBC as a tenure track assistant professor, but I got my PhD in 2007. That's 8 years ago. It means I'm not qualified. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Next question.
I apologize. The next question is from Abul Razi. Your line is open.
Hi, I have a question. I am Abul Faz Razi from Northern Arizona University. In our university, we have master's and undergraduate program, but we don't have PhD program. And I hear that there is a tendency in NSF that prefer supporting students than hiring postdocs. So my question is that, is this true? I mean, if we have option to support master's students, compared to more theoretical proposals that hire postdoc. Is this the case that supporting the students is always preferred, or it depends based on the proposal?
I would say it depends based on the proposal, and more than anything, it depends on which is going to help you get ready for your career and write your next proposal. If having the students is going to help you, then go with them. If having the postdoc is going to help you, go with them.
Thank you.
And the next question, the participant did not record their name, but they're from UMass Boston. Your line is open.
Jim, is that allowed?
Hello.
It's a question, right? So I'm not conflicted.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yes. I'm Craig from UMass Boston. I understand that I cannot have co-PI in this proposal, but can I have my colleague as my collaborator? Because we may want to carry out some experiments together in his lab.
As long as they're not paid, then it's okay. And as long as they're not listed as a co-PI or a senior personnel, as long as they're just a collaborator.
Okay. So can I have his support letter attached to my proposal? Does it help?
You may have a collaboration letter. You may not have a support letter.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
And as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. The next question is from Daniel, University of Pittsburgh. Your line is open.
Hello. I wanted to ask you about the relationship between the CRI and the Career Award. So suppose I get the CRI and then the next year I submit the career based on some of the data I collect. Would the CRI be advantageous, or would it be a disadvantage, or it doesn't matter at all?
It doesn't matter at all.
So it'll be just neutral?
Correct.
I see. Thank you.
And I'm currently showing no further questions in queue.
Okay. Anything you want to add before we'll give another minute for questions?
Well, there is something I've been telling a lot of junior people who've been talking to me one-on-one. I get the impression, and except for a number of years now, I get the impression that many junior people are nervous about talking to program officers You've seen too many TV shows and Hollywood movies. You believe everybody in the government shoots first and asks questions afterwards, and we're crazy in general. I'd like to try to help you overcome that, to become comfortable talking to the people here. We are actually your colleagues. Most of the program officers are professors on leave from their institutions, working here for a few years, or were previously professors before coming to NSF on a permanent basis. We're members of the academic community, people you would meet at conferences all the time. You should become comfortable sending us emails and calling to discuss things. You should not be nervous about doing that. It'll help your careers a lot to talk to the people here in the building, not be shy about it.
I haven't been here as long as you, Efrain, but I haven't heard of you biting a PI.
Hope not.
So maybe if you like, I can talk about the SCI program a little bit. This is a newer program. In fact, the career as well as the CLIA are newer for SCI. And so just to look at what the SCI research focus is, it's actually youth-inspired multidisciplinary research, which also means that there could be PIs from non-computer science departments. For example, there could be data scientists, there could be computer scientists, computer chemists. So keep that in mind, and maybe you can tell your colleagues also know who may be thinking about this, but they don't know that they truly qualify. That's one thing, and you want to make sure that you actually, if you have any question, you want to send it to me. I'm in fact open to this. Also think about, the computational research that could be done in the context of, what resources you have, and also in the context of what collaboration you can make. And there was a question about, what kind of collaboration can happen. So, for example, XSEED resources are there. There are other resources which NSF actually has funded. Those are the places that you can actually find a letter of collaboration. So maybe you can look at that possibility. Maybe a lot of things are not locally available. In general, actually, I would say that, I'm trying to actually encourage all to look at ACI as well, since this is a newer program. And I'm looking forward to some, questions.
Operator, do we have any other questions?
We do have two questions in queue. One moment for the first question, please. The first question is from Sedaran. Your line is open.
Hello?
Go ahead, please.
Oh, hi. I have an eligibility question. I was supposed to start my position at University of Michigan this September, but I'm having some visa issues which might delay my appointment by 1 to 2 months. Will I be able to apply on, future within the year appointment, or that's not possible?
Your university would have to state that you are a full-time employee of the university in order to be eligible. If that's not clear, and perhaps you want to contact one of us individually because there's some personal issues, maybe you shouldn't be discussing with 100 of your closest friends.
Yes, all right. Okay, thank you very much.
So please do feel free to reach out to any of us.
Okay, I'll do that. Thank you very much.
And the next question is from Ma Zeng. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Ma Zeng from New Mexico State University. So my first question is about preliminary data. So as a brand new professor, all of my previous project experience were done with my advisors. And I think my new idea is naturally related to all of my previous project experience. So I'm wondering if I could include my previous publications as a preliminary data to support my new idea, if the idea is somehow related. Or is it a bad idea to include previous publication?
You want to use your past publications and past work and show how this is relevant to what you're proposing. It's always actually strengthens your case.
Right. I should also add to that you have to include a bio sketch of yourself in the proposal. That's one of the required parts of the proposal. And in the bio sketch, you have to list your publications, the ones that are the best in your opinion and the ones that are most relevant to the current project. So you are going to automatically include those in that sense anyway. You have to.
Oh, okay. I see. Thank you. And so another question is about the title. So I noticed that the title should include CII and one or more specific programs. So is there any preference in terms of how many programs are involved? For example, assume I have an idea, I can try to focus the idea within one program, but it's also related to another program. So is there any preference or suggestions to focus on one program or include two related programs?
One or two is fine. I would discourage you from having more than two.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, if it's not clear, that's when actually you want to contact the program officers and then see how it is relevant and what is the best fit.
And sometimes there legitimately will be more than one because it's on the boundary, and that's fine too.
Okay, thank you.
The next question is from Shipra Agarwal. Your line is open.
Go ahead, please.
Please check your mute button.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'm a tenure track faculty at Columbia University in the Operations Research Department, and I wanted to ask if Operations Research is eligible or is it only Computer Science and Electrical Engineering departments?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to explain, that really this is not limited to only computer sciences. If you have relevant research that applies to this directorate, you should definitely apply. Maybe a few things add up, so you're doing computational aspects or data science aspects, and that definitely is something that we also welcome.
As long as you would ordinarily be submitting proposals to SIZE, to any of the SIZE programs, then you're eligible if as an operations researcher. If you would apply to MAC, for example, then you would not be eligible. But if SIZE is your natural home, even if you're not in the computer science department, that's fine. Did you want to add something?
I just said that this might be a good case for somebody to contact the program director and talk it through, because certainly computational aspects of OR are 100% in scope, right?
Good point.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
The next question is from Francisco Servant. Your line is open.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Hi. So my question is, one of the things that are particular for career grants, career proposals, is that they care more about education than regular NSF grants. And my question is, for the CRII grants, what are some particular aspects that you would like to see covered and that make them different from regular NSF grants?
Well, CRII does not expect specific coverage of education, unlike career. There are not really any specific things that we're looking for in the same way that education is a focus for career. We're looking for the intellectual merit and broader impact, but we don't have specific requirements beyond that.
Okay, thanks.
The next question is from Mr. Inge from Syracuse University. Your line is open.
Go ahead, please.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, I'm Yuzhu Tan from Syracuse University. I'm wondering how much is this CRI proposal related to my previous publication. So basically, my situation is I have, one proposal, potential target to extend my previous research, and the other one is more radical for me. It's a totally brand new topic. So which one would you encourage me to try for this CRI proposal?
I think, you probably have to judge for yourself, see, what actually is more groundbreaking, if you think. But clearly, having past research and something based on it, it makes your case stronger. So you should look at that. I'm not discouraging the brand new radical ideas, of course. That's actually also possible that you're starting a new line, and that definitely, also is encouraged.
What do you think you're going to be doing 5 years from now? If your goal is 5 years from now to be going down this groundbreaking area, then that's where you should be writing your CRII, because that's going to help you get ready to do the preliminary work to help you be ready to write those bigger proposals in the future. If you see 5 years from now that you're going to be working more along the lines of where you've already been, then you should do your CRII in that area.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
We do have our next question in queue. One moment for the name, please. The next question is from Jason Wu. Your line is open.
Hi. My name is Jason. I am from the University of Houston. I have a question. My proposal is very much related to the oil and gas industry. I'm wondering that a proposal that relates to the traditional energy sector will make it less attractive.
Well, it depends on the computer science part of it. So, for example, if you're doing test beds for assessing cyber physical systems aspects of the oil and gas industry, or research for automating oil and gas systems, that would be well in scope for the cyber physical systems program. It would probably fit in some of your of the ACI programs as well.
So I think you have to look at the computational aspect, the data aspect of it, and as Jeremy is pointing out, I think this could actually fit into ACI. So maybe you want to send a summary to me.
Okay, thank you.
And I'm currently showing no other questions in queue.
Okay. So last call for questions. All right. If you'll go to the last slide, two more after that one. Next one, that one. Okay, so the takeaways, just as a reminder, CRII is for new faculty members to get you yourself started in independent research through funding students, equipment, and travel. The proposals are due the 30th of September. You should contact an NSF program officer with questions. And we thank you for participating in the webinar. We hope the CRII program will enable you to get started. And I guess finally, the slides and audio will be posted to the SIES website in the next few days. If you have questions, ask a program officer. Thanks very much.
Thank you for your participation in today's conference. All parties may now disconnect.